Welcome back to the Casey Adams Show. Today, I am joined by Michael Brandt, the CEO of HVMN, or Ketone IQ. Thank you so much for coming to the show, Michael.
Casey, good to be here. It's going to be a fun conversation, I can tell.
Absolutely. So I've seen your brand, HVMN, around for, I feel like, the past year in so many different places. It wasn't until about 2 weeks ago when I tried the product, Ketone IQ, and I've loved it. And I'm not even just saying this because you're on the show. I've been recommending it to friends, and I'm just a huge fan of not only the brand, but how you represent it online, who you are as a person. Insane marathon time, which we'll get into. But for those that may not know what Ketone IQ is, HVMN, I would love for you to just give a high-level overview before we dive in.
Yeah, thanks. I'm glad you're having a good time with it. I appreciate all the compliments on representing the brand, all that. It's very integrated. I feel like very tightly integrated across like work and life and everything. It's just like one mode that I operate inside of. I got really passionate about human performance a decade ago. I studied computer science at Stanford and then got really into biohacking and seeing like all my smart friends were developing apps. Like Evan Spiegel was a year after me, made Snapchat. The Instagram guys are a couple years ahead of me. Everyone made all these like really cool apps for the smartphone.
So epic.
Yeah, it's super cool. And then my insight, you know, Uber, all that, like coming out of Silicon Valley around that time. And my insight was that the human body was going to be the next platform for innovation. Like the smartphone, you know, at this point, I'd say like most of the important apps that are going to exist on the smartphone have like exist. Yeah. There's always going to be more innovation, but it's kind of plateaued. And I saw that the human body was the next platform for innovation because you have these like Whoop, Aura, Apple Watch, people are measuring and monitoring their biomarkers, continuous glucose monitors, like levels. You have people measuring and monitoring their body and seeing what's going on inside of them. And it then follows that people are going to get really mindful about what they're putting into their body. Yeah. Like what's driving that? How do I get a better sleep score? How do I get better blood glucose control? How do I better manage my system? And so this is like very nerdy for sure. Like I came in with like computer science lens on the human body as a system, seeing like API-ification of the human body.
Yeah.
That like we're understanding the inputs and outputs of our body. Like tens of millions of Americans are, and you know, people all over the world are getting smarter about their human body as a system. And there's going to be a ton of innovation around that. Just like when the internet took off, there's just like a ton of innovation. When the smartphone took off, a ton of innovation around that. And then
now it's the human body, you're saying.
Yeah, now it's the human body is one of, you know, there's other platforms, right? But like AI and space travel and stuff, a lot of cool stuff going on. But I see the human body, like the gut microbiome, the new sensor technology, new different novel inputs as like this really robust, like hundreds of billions of dollars of value to be created inside of that. And then I started thinking, okay, what's like the primitives of the system? Like what's, you know, electrolytes is already invented, proteins already invented, like what doesn't exist. And if you remember like 5 years ago or so, like keto diet, bulletproof coffee. Yeah, I remember
seeing that really popping off about 5 years ago.
Yeah, like intermittent fasting. I did a week-long fast with my co-founder and a ton of people in our community.
Week-long fast?
Yeah, yeah.
We'll get into that.
It's cool. Like when you fast, you can see your blood ketones go up because whenever you're not eating, whenever your blood sugar drops, your body will start to make ketones. And the same is true in the ketogenic diet. Yeah. You eat really low carb, your body makes ketones. When you're doing endurance exercise, you go on a 14-mile run, by the end of it, your body is running low on blood sugar. You start making a lot of ketones. So I saw that a lot of people were jumping through all these hoops, like going through a lot of friction to get their ketone levels up and then feeling really good. Like, oh, wow, I feel really sharp when I fast. Oh, wow, like keto diet makes me feel really high energy. But like these are all really hard things to do that also have have like major drawbacks to them too. But realizing that like the ketone was the key driving factor on all the benefits that people were seeing. And then it was that kind of like dumb slash smart question of like, hey, if ketones are so good, why can't you walk into a Sprouts grocery store? Why can't you go on Amazon, like buy a shot of pure ketones and drink it? And that was the kind of entrepreneur spark that went off. And then it was really expensive at the start. It was not, you know, no one was doing this. And there's not really a supply chain for it, but I was able to, with my co-founder, like we got investors together. We built a team. We got a big contract. We got a $6 million contract.
With, I want to talk about that because I know I've heard you talk about this on another podcast. So prior to Ketone IQ being a consumer product, you got a $6 million military contract. how did that come about? And what was the roadmap prior to launching this? Because I feel like it's so rare to hear a story like that, especially like a CBG product that customers are loving and enjoying, that you've had all of this research with people that are just peak that are utilizing this. Just how did that contract come about in the early days of the company?
Yeah, that it was such a novel idea. This wasn't like a new flavor of popcorn or a new flavor of sparkling water, where it's like kind of a, you know, one turn of innovation from what's on the market. It was like very different, like new supply chain, we had to like go through a process with FDA to get it registered and like safety tested and all that stuff. New, so much of it was new. And getting the initial customer on it, like it was very expensive at the start. And I think it's an interesting entrepreneurial lesson. Like it was $30 a drink.
Wow, for one of the bottles?
Yeah.
Wow.
And so like we were selling it on our website technically, but it like didn't make any sense for like normal people. I could barely afford it with my, you know, employee discount on it. But it was really interesting to like super elite performers. So like special forces and, like pro tour de France cyclists, like Conor McGregor started using it. Like we had like some really pro athlete types using it for stamina and like mental acuity. And the military contract honestly came out of the DOD was interested in super fuels for soldiers, and it costs $1 million to train a Navy SEAL.
Wow.
And this is just a major investment. And if you can somehow either increase the performance or extend the performance period of a given individual, that's like materially valuable return on the investment if you think about it that way. So the DOD is obviously interested in a lot of like advanced aircraft and ammo and all that stuff. But they also invest a lot in the human side of like, how do we have better performing individuals? You know, a lot of it starts with like special operators, tip of the spear, and then trickles into, you know, general infantry all over the entire DOD. So there's a lot of interest in like, okay, how do we have better performing soldiers? Wow. And so there's like this pocket of like basically innovation dollars for nutrition that we were able to tap into around ketones.
That's right. That's incredible. Like true innovation. I love how you said that. It wasn't just a small degree of change. It was this whole new category that you created, the first ketone supplement on the market.
Yeah. Which has been really fun as an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so what were, you say you went to Stanford, you're, you know, the peers, Evan Spiegel, these people that are launching these massive corporations now. For you, like, where did the entrepreneurial drive come from in your life? Like, prior to HVMN, ketone, what were you spending your time on? And did you expect yourself or see a plan to be an entrepreneur long-term when you were growing up? Or how did that fall into your life?
Yeah, I always had entrepreneur bone in me, I think. My parents were entrepreneurs. Like, a lot of entrepreneurs I know as well. Like, my parents were like smaller scale, like they are both attorneys and they ran their own law practice where they help a lot of like just family law and like civil rights law, people who maybe get, you know, abused by the police. My mom will like represent them and help make right with the police system. So like just, you know, two people or a couple people, like smaller, you know, it's like if your parents own a restaurant or something, it's not like this venture scale thing, but like I saw the level of, you know, just attention to detail, paranoia of like, because this is back in the day. I remember she would like photocopy everything three different times because she would like send a copy to this person and like keep two backup copies in two different locations. Because like anything that, you know, as an entrepreneur, anything that can go wrong will go wrong. And just like, and then, so she would like send it, she would fax it, she would call them to make sure that they got it. You know what I mean? Just like that level of like, because when you're the entrepreneur, it's like the buck stops with you. If the thing doesn't happen, there's no like,
you have no one to call above.
Right.
You are the guy.
Right. So like just everything, like, oh, the office got broken into, like, that's a new problem to solve today. Like, oh, this happened, that happened. And I just growing up around that, I think always seemed like interesting and doable. And just the, what really clicked for me was I think about business is like you have all these different languages that you need to be able to speak from like design to manufacturing to fundraising to legal regulatory to like there's all these different languages. And at some point I realized I was like pretty good at most of these languages, like at like B level at everything. And I had the opportunity to be a product manager at YouTube, which helped with that. Cause I think as a product manager in tech, you a lot of times are like spinning a lot of different plates across like, oh, we're doing this. I need to understand the tech, but then I also need to pitch the PR team on what the story is, but I also need to like understand the UX around it. So like that kind of multifacetedness and then seeing that I can, I think a lot of the role of the entrepreneur is being able to like take a singular vision and like communicate it across all the different languages. Like you got to be able to speak like French and Arabic and Mandarin, like not the best, but like good enough. Like you need, like the lawyers need to know what you're doing and so do your designers and so do your salespeople. And like, they're all speaking a little bit different language. Yeah. So at some point I realized like, oh, I can do that. Like I ought to, I feel very much as like a servant leader. Like I want to, I think it's a service I could provide to people I work with is being a good, just someone who can see it clearly and help to like translate across different.
Yeah, absolutely. That's incredible. Appreciate the context there. Something that you've been doing this past year, which I've been following your journey on social more recently, is you've been putting out a lot of content and, you know, and I've mentioned this before, but the overlap of like who you are as a human and how you operate, an incredible, what was it? You were in the Chicago marathon recently. It was 248 your marathon time?
240 flat. Yeah.
240 flat. Yeah. Oh my goodness. Insane. So when it comes to just operating as a peak performer, but then also building a company in that space, just how do you not only find time or how, where do you place significance on being a marathoner, running, training, and as someone that is living and breathing what their product is beneficial for?
Yeah, I think it's important to be out there as a founder. People don't like buying from brands these days at all. Like people want to know who's behind their product. So I think about it, I'm very fortunate to be in this position where like for me, marathoning also is like, it's almost like part of my job where it's like, I'm not,
yeah, it's marketing.
Yeah. Like I'm not a pro athlete, but I kind of am. Like it certainly like helps the brand when it's like, hey, I'm actually putting our product to the test. I'm meeting a lot of other great athletes. I'm going on a run with like a pro Ironman buddy on Thursday. It's like, and the fact I can like keep up with that. I mean, he's also good at other, other sports and it's not a super serious run. I cannot keep up with him on the bike by any margin, but that the point is that, just being in the arena with like top performers, I think is an important part of the job. So like, it's like, I don't know, I have a friend who runs a coffee company and like all he does is talk about coffee and think about coffee. And like, you almost are like, dude, stop talking about coffee. But then you're also like, wait, can I invest in you? Cause like you literally won't stop talking about coffee. Like if you're that, like that's kind of who you want to invest in, right? Like, okay, this person like just won't stop. So I kind of have become that person. Like I'm just constantly thinking about ketones, drinking ketones, running marathons on ketones, just like constantly in it, like pushing it all the way to the edge of what it can be. Cause I think that people, I think as an entrepreneur, you need to like walk, talk the lifestyle of what you're doing. Like, I think if you run an alcohol company, you end up like drinking a lot of booze, which
doing parties, product sharing it around.
Exactly. Sure. Exactly. So I feel very fortunate again to be doing something in like the health space where it's like, okay, my job requirement is like be really fit and like run around a lot and like live a healthy lifestyle. I actually think it could be kind of hard if you're running like more like a sinful company, like that general, like or if you're selling like cigarettes, you got to like, you got to smoke a lot of cigarettes, like show people that you, the product's good. If you're selling booze, you got to drink a lot of booze. So, I feel very fortunate there.
That's awesome. So when did you run your first marathon?
I ran my first marathon like 2018, San Francisco Marathon. I lived in San Francisco at the time and it was really important to me to qualify for Boston because
first time.
Yeah.
Wow. Beast.
I don't know why. Like I heard when I was like really little I heard that people ran marathons. And I thought that was crazy. And then I heard that like, oh, there's a special marathon in Boston that like, like they don't even let you run it unless you are like hit a certain time. And I don't know why I always like kind of fixated on that. I had like a friend's dad who was like into marathoning and that just seemed interesting to me. It's like, well, if you're going to do something, be like, try to be like really good at it.
Yeah.
Like, so to me, it was never about like, can I finish a marathon or not? It was like, can I do it in a like good time? And so San Francisco is like a hard place to do it, but whatever, like, effort, right, like hilly. You gotta, yeah, it's a hilly place, but like, I also, you know, had home field advantage of being able to like train on the course and everything. And
did you qualified the first time?
Yeah.
What was your first marathon time?
2:55.
And it's sub 3.
Yeah, right? You had to get sub 3. It's always, Boston's always like 3 hours. And then sometimes they drop it down a little bit from there for like the official qualifying time, depending on how like crowded what is the field is.
Isn't that, what is it, like a 6:50 average mile time?
Yeah.
Right around there for people that may not know.
Yeah.
Incredible. Yes. For context, I ran my first marathon last December. I did the Honolulu Marathon. And just that process, I learned so much about myself. And now I'm doing Palm Beach this year. And I tell myself next year, I want to try to go sub 3. My first one, I was 3:36. The goal this year is 3:15 to 3:20. We'll see. So on that note, like, what is the best piece of advice for marathon training that you've received? Because I think as someone that was really getting into it the past year, you know, you follow the plan. I've talked to so many people, but for you, like, what is the single best piece of advice that you've received?
Oh man, I have questions for you too, Casey. How it's changed you of like what, like outside of just being a better runner, like what it's changed. I can answer your question first. I'm curious.
I'll answer after.
Yeah. Best piece of advice that once you break through this level of like 20 or 30 miles a week, that it gets a lot easier beyond there. Cause what happens at like this 20, 30 miles a week, I think that's when you really become like a runner. I'm not trying to like gatekeep or whatever. Like everyone who runs is a runner. I'm not trying to gatekeep here, but there's a certain level with like 20, 30 miles a week where like you just break it down. If you're doing 30 miles a week, you're either going on like 6 5-mile runs or 5 6-mile runs or like a couple, you know, maybe some longer runs. Like you're running like most days and you're putting up some real miles. And then
that's where I am right now, like 30, 40 miles a week.
Yeah. And that's the point where like, if you have some like kink in your form, it's going to really show, like the pressure is going to break. You're now, you have a bridge and like, cool, you can bike over the bridge, but now you're driving like semi trucks over the bridge. Like if your form is weird, if you heel strike in a weird way, if you have some asymmetry, if you like bend your knees too much or what, like if there's some weird thing, it's going to really like come to the surface and it's, you're going to get injured and it's going to knock you back out. But if you work on it and you're like paying attention a lot to your mechanics, doing like activations, like making sure your, this glute muscle is firing to take some of the load off of your quads. And like, if you do the right things, like move in the right patterns, watch enough YouTube videos basically, and just like download all the information and you like get past that, then like the jump from like 0 to 20 is like a lot harder than the jump from 20 to 40 or 40 to 60. That it becomes, then it's just like a function of time.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, do I have time? Do I care? Like, is this an interesting hobby? Would I rather go play chess or whatever, like watch Netflix, whatever. Yeah. But like that, if you can get through that 20, 30, and it's not about grinding, it's about like truly working smart, paying attention and listening to your body. If you can get through that point, then like you can become a really good runner because like your form will be at a point where you can like double, triple your load from there.
You do around what, 90 miles a week? I've heard you say it before.
Yeah. My last build up to Chicago peaked at 90.
Wow.
So average in like the 80s for like,
that's a whole different game than I'm playing right now.
I it's funny because like I used to see it the same way. Like when I trained for my first marathon, I did like 40 to 50 miles a week, which was like the craziest thing ever. Yeah. I just felt like my body and mind were transforming. It was like, I kind of pushed through that wall. Yeah. Like took a while to ramp to that point. I was like, wow, some of these pros are doing like, I like have this book and like the back pages of the book are like the more advanced plans. I was like, yo, never, not me. Can't be me. And now
you're dominating it,
which is funny. Cause it's like, you get addicted. I think about it. Like you get addicted to something in life.
Yeah.
Like straight up, like you get addicted to Netflix or to sugar or to smoking weed all the time. Like you get addicted to something in life and like, okay, I'm addicted to like feed me miles. Yeah. And like as far as I'm concerned, that's probably one of the best addictions, like that, or I don't know, get into like lifting, bodybuilding, or it's like something athletic. Yeah. Like that seems like a pretty good way to channel that fundamental itch that I think a lot of us have. Like I certainly do. Like there's so many, like the best, like marathoners, ultra marathoners, like they literally are like ex drug addicts. Yeah. That are like, okay, this is not going to work for me. New addiction. It's like, all right, well,
I love that.
It's very pragmatic, it's true, right? So yeah. What's going on with you, Casey? So like for, you said like, you know, you're running a lot, you're on your second marathon, you're, you feel like it's really like evolving who you are. What are you saying?
It was one of those things that like my running journey in a nutshell, like prior to mid 2020, I never ran more than 3 miles in my life. Like I grew up, I played sports. I played hockey, lacrosse, football, got injured. I have this, I don't know where it is, somewhere. I have this neck brace trophy that I had this artist make because I was in a neck brace for 6 months when I was a sophomore in high school, almost paralyzed, could never play football again. And that was just what eventually led me down the path of entrepreneurship. And over the years, I've never really been pulled into running. I used to go to a run club that my buddy D. Murthy would host every Saturday, and I loved it. And I was running in the most terrible running shoes. But then slowly but surely, you know how it goes. It's you do your first 5 miles. Then I did my first, just right here in Santa Monica, like 10 mile. And I remember the feeling after I ran 10, well, that's when the switch went off for me, where it's like, okay, I want to do a half. And then I did my first half in Malibu. And then, you know, it's actually, to take a step back, I wasn't training properly when I was going to go potentially do my first marathon. I injured my knee. So I didn't end up doing the LA marathon in 2022. And then I ended up doing Honolulu last year. But I would say that the biggest takeaway is just that ability to push through more than you're capable of, right? Like I remember prior to doing the marathon, I interviewed this guy, you might know him, James Lawrence, the Iron Cowboy. Are you familiar with him?
I know of him, yeah.
Okay, so like he did 101 Ironman triathlons over 101 days. And I remember talking to him and just, you know, it blows your mind. Yeah. He broke this world record. Initially, he did 50 Ironmans in 50 days in all 50 states. And I remember talking to him and, you know, we're talking about how he, you know, takes what he learns from that experience into life. And the one thing that just kept me going initially through the probably back half of the marathon was just 1 foot in front of the other. And I think it's so in line with business and entrepreneurship where like every day you're going to have challenges, you're going to have obstacles. I mean, that even goes for personal life, right? Where it's just, I think I've never felt better when I'm in a run and when I finish it, that feeling is what I'm chasing. Like my buddy, my past business partner of my last company, Kieran, he did his first Ironman the other day and on Sunday. And when he finished it, we were catching up on the phone, telling him congrats, all this stuff. And I'm just like, be grateful for this moment. This is the first one he did because this is the experience and the feeling that I'm now chasing. Like that feeling of, you know, pursuit of excellence and then accomplishment and then on to the next. Like that's how my brain works. And I think a lot of people, right? Like what's next? How can I get better? How can I increase or decrease my time and actually run faster? But overall, I think it's just that ability to put one step in front of another, keep moving forward, even when you're in pain, even when you have no clue how you're going to get through. And it's so in line with business and entrepreneurship, at least how I view it. And I remember I've heard you talk about this and another show you did, and I know that you believe in that, but for you, what has been the biggest indicator of the parallels between marathoning and business?
They always talk about how entrepreneurship is a marathon and not a sprint, right? That's like one of the cliches in entrepreneurship. And so then that also was part of what piqued my interest of like, okay, like let's get good at marathons. Like, and it's interesting how directly physically the analogy is from marathoning into business, where in business, you know, you have to keep showing up every day. It's like, you feel a lot of pain, but it's not really pain. Cause you're just like staring at spreadsheets and like email. It's like, ow, that investor sent me like a rejection. It doesn't actually hurt the way that like go do a 12 mile lactate threshold run. Like that actually hurts. Like go do 20 by 400 meter repeats at the track and like jog on the rest. It's like jog 200 meters on the rest for your recovery. And then do another 400. Like that stuff actually hurts.
For sure. I brought Diego's a bodybuilder and we've been going to do some track days as well. And it's a whole different animal.
It's wild. And like, so that visceral feeling of marathoning, pushing yourself to that like physical pain and then seeing what happens, seeing what you do with it. Like how's your self-talk? How do you work through that? And it's just like, it carries over so much into business because like, there's just so many, there's like a book to be written. And this is part of what's been inspiring to me to like post every day. And like, I've really quickly grown my following. I had like 2000 followers, less than 2000 followers at the start of this year. I have 80K now. Like I feel like I'm just getting started. I just like tapped in. I feel like there's this infinity gold vein of like the overlap between running and business.
Yeah.
Cause there's all these little things where like, you're like, oh, that hurts. But then when you're really real with yourself, we're like, you're like, does it hurt? Or am I just like sad about, or is it like a 4 out of 10? But I'm, and it's like, oh, boohoo. I'm only on mile 6 out of 15. It's like David Goggins says that when you feel like you're at your limit, this is one of my favorite David Gogginsisms, which is that when you feel like you're at your limit, you're at 40% of your limit. He doesn't even say you're at like, oh, you have a little bit of left in the tank. He's like, no, you can basically like 2.5. Yeah. Like you're like, whatever you think you're done. Like there's so much more. I don't know where he came up with that number, but what a great, great David Gogginsism where like, when you feel like something hurts, you can just kind of reality check yourself. Like, how bad is it really? Like, can I keep putting one foot in front of the other? Like, is there something actually stopping me from doing that? Am I going to die? Am I going to pee blood? Like, no, like I actually can just keep going at this speed. It's a little uncomfortable, but then it's like your mind can kind of wrap around it where like how uncomfortable is it really? Like coming from Chicago where I grew up, like sometimes when it's cold, you're just cold. And you don't do anything about it. You're just a little cold. Yeah. And like my wife is from LA. So we always joke about it. Cause it's like, you can just be a little cold. It doesn't like, it's not a bad thing. It's not like you're not getting pneumonia.
Yeah.
You're not getting hypothermia. You can just like be cold and you can see it as like a terrible thing. Or you can see it as a, just a thing.
Yeah.
It's just like, hey, I'm running. This is what it feels like for my body to be in motion. It's not even pain, not pain. It's like, I don't know, being in a sauna, is that painful or is that just another feeling? Is spicy food, does that hurt or is it just another sensation to be thankful for and grateful for? So you get into like this very, I found it's forced this like deep gratitude and appreciation of like, wow, I'm just thankful to be alive. Like when I'm on hospital bed at age, whatever, 90, I'm going to be like wishing I could be back here embracing the suck on this 12 mile lactate threshold run. Like this is sucking the marrow out of life. Like I'm very grateful for this feeling here. So there's a lot of like mind games that happen inside of that, like dealing with that very visceral pain that I think then carry over into entrepreneurship and just like these super, super like obvious ways. Cause like the physicality of it, it's like, you can't deny the pain. It's like, then when you get into a rough spot at work, it's like, well, just work, you know, just run more, like just eat a little bit more pain and we can figure this out. Yeah.
I love that and appreciate the perspective and real quick before I kind of change the conversation to more the business side of it. So 240 marathon, that's your new record. What's the average pace when you're doing that? I want people to know the level that you do it because I feel like the last year, like understanding marathon times and seeing the world record being broken recently and seeing you're at 240, it's the definition of excellence in terms of how you need to train for that to actually achieve that time. So like, what's the average mile time?
It's 6:08.
Wow.
And I have unfinished business with the marathon. I think I can go faster. So that was my first marathon since the pandemic. Like the last one I did was in 2019. And so obviously the whole world was on kind of a freeze. And so I was running a little bit, but not at that volume of miles. And like, this is my first real build. So I hit a PR, but I feel like
what would be the goal time that you, it's even like hearing it and talking about it is sort of daunting to you. What would that time be?
You keep chasing the dragon, right? Cause it's like, I think I can definitely crack 6 minutes a mile. So that would, I'm at 6:08 average pace. I can definitely get into like high 5:50 something. Wow. And then from there, I then just keep cracking at it. I think I can get for overall marathon time into the 220s if I work on it a bunch. That's sub of that, like, so you get to, if you're 218 for men, is you get to, you get invited to try out for the Olympics if you're sub 218. That's like pretty special. I think that like you have to have a gift and or just an insane amount of dedication. Yeah. I don't know how, like, inherently gifted I am or not at it. Like, where my limit is, but I definitely think that I can get faster without having to be like a, like genetically lucky, yeah. Oh, high VO2 max, like big lung capacity person. I think literally just with like being smart and like caring about it for a long time. It's like anyone can get like pretty yeah. darn good at the violin if you just like play violin until your fingers bleed for like
yeah.
5 years, 10 years, 15, like you should be able to get pretty good. So I feel like that, I don't think set the world record. I don't think I'm going to go to the Olympics, but I think there's like, I think I could like win some, significant gains beyond where I'm at. It's all just for fun, right? It's all just for like personal mastery to me. I just want to be the best. It's like be the best I can be and hopefully inspire other people to be the best at what they do at their own thing. I think that's like the whole point of life is to let it like observe beautiful things in the universe, let them flow through you and then try to make them happen yourself, whether you're a violinist or a cook or a marathon, or just like try to do really masterful work, like make yourself a master of whatever thing, basketball, this, that, being a parent, like whatever, like try to be really good at the thing. And then like, in doing that also inspire other people to then go do the same. And it's all like,
yeah, absolutely. It's
all a virtuous cycle from there.
I love it. I want to talk about just this idea of the early stage of the company. I recently had the episode actually went live today. I interviewed the founder of Whoop, Will. Yeah. And you know, we were talking about the early days of Whoop. They were, and I kind of drew a parallel here with what you guys did, where like, they were focused on like peak athletes, like testing the product on athletes at a high level before they went consumer focused, and hearing the story of the military contract and then, you know, dealing with the peak performers and SEALs to then creating a product that's consumer focused. In the early days of the company, like what were some of the hardships or even today that you're dealing with a product that's so unique, so different? Because again, like, I think it's something not only unique, but it's one of a kind. And I'm sure there's many challenges that people might not even heard of before because it's just such a unique, differentiated product.
Yeah. One of the key paths, decisions that you make as an entrepreneur is going for super innovative blue skies where it's going to take a ton of work, but that the like reward could potentially be really interesting. Where like you invent something that's never been invented before, but like everything's going to be challenging. Yeah. Supply chain is going to be hard. Pricing is going to be hard. Communicating what it is to a customer, like creating a category around it. Like if you're creating the first computer, it's like, why do I need a computer? What am I going to do? Put recipes on this? Like what would one do with it? And right now a billion people have a computer in their pocket. What are you going to do with this new thing? Like, food related is like kombucha. Like no one knew what to do with kombucha for the first, like,
it's actually such an interesting, I interviewed GT Dave.
Nice.
And just hearing that, like kombucha was such an oddball product that no one liked. Everyone was like, oh, what's that, the flavor? Like, what is it? And I mean, now he's built a multi-billion dollar brand. And it was super cool having that conversation with him because like, how it got passed on from his parents and how he was just making it when he was in school. Very unique product.
Yeah. So I think there's two categories of business, right? Because you can have these like very blue skies, innovative businesses, or you can have ones that are more like, hey, this is a coffee brand, but with like a twist to it. Like it's got a celebrity or it's got like a new functional or a new flavor to it, but it's like, it's mainly just like a next door innovation to something that exists. I don't think either is obvious. Like there's great businesses that are built both ways. This like the, you know, making a new coffee or a new popcorn, Jonas Brothers popcorn company. It's easy in the sense everyone knows what popcorn is, but it's hard to stand apart because there's already a lot of popcorn out there versus, okay, you created kombucha or you created ketones. Like there's not a lot of competitors, but also no one knows what it is and you have to explain it to people. So I think that's one of the like key early fundamental paths that you decide, like when you're as an entrepreneur or like on a given concept is like pick your poison. Do you want to be in like a crowded market where you're like elbowing people aside and like trying to differentiate? Or do you want to be in like an absolutely blue sky, not crowded market, but like no one knows what the market is. And then what can be challenging inside of that is that, you know, you talk to investors or talk to the buyer at a big grocery stores, it's like, what is this? What's the TAM? What's the total addressable market? How big is this? And it's like, I don't know. Whoop started pretty small. Gatorade started as like a little science project with the Florida Gators in 1965. And now electrolytes is a $30 billion market. So how big can this be? I'm spending my whole life on it. I think ketones can be massive. Even if I got hit by a bus, ketones would be massive. I think that Pandora's box is opened on it. Like electrolytes was just a strictly better technology than straight water for hydrating you. Even if Gatorade didn't exist, electrolyte innovation still would have happened. It might not have happened as quickly, or Gatorade Inc. wouldn't have created and captured all that value. But like would the smartphone have happened without Apple? It was still there are other companies doing stuff. You would have had Android and other, it may not have been created and captured by Apple in the same way. But I think what we're doing with ketones, it's like the time has come for that idea. And I think one of the challenges is always convincing people of how big that opportunity can be. Cause I think a lot of people want to hear, oh, you're making a new flavor of popcorn. I know exactly how much popcorn is sold in the world. And if you got 1% of the popcorn market, you'd be very rich. It's versus something more new and inventive.
Absolutely. What have been, to whatever extent you can speak to it, in terms of the life cycle of the business, fundraising, I was telling you before the show, but I raised just a pre-seed round for my last company. Learned so much in that process. For you as CEO, what have you learned through fundraising, raising capital for the business? Because I know that obviously there was the military contract, but more of traditional venture capital, whatever you can speak to, I'd love to just hear sort of where the business is and what that experience has been like for you as the CEO, talking to investors, sharing this unique idea and really what you learned from that process.
For my type of business that is very blue skies inventive, it's really important. Everyone who's invested has been ideologically aligned and obsessed with the product. No one looks at it as just oh, I like your numbers. Oh, you have a good EBITDA margin and blah, blah, blah. Let me invest. They have to be a co-conspirator on making ketones happen and fueling the world. And we're going to make 10% of global calorie supply come from ketones, right? It's very mission driven, which is exciting to me. I think it works for my personality, but a lot of investors or operators and entrepreneurs everyone's different. There's multiple routes to success. I want to be very careful not to be prescriptive. It's this works for me and my kind of personality, what's exciting to me. If you do something very blue skies and you're going to have to, everyone who's going to get involved, everyone who's going to work at your company, everyone who's going to invest, they're all going to be going to have to drink the Kool-Aid with you on this cult that you're creating until that becomes at some point there's a tipping point where it's oh yeah, of course, electrolytes, of course, kombucha, of course, everyone's going to wear a smart device that tells them their biomarkers with, with the Whoops of the world. It's going to feel like this niche culty thing until one day it's oh, we're just, it isn't. And then you look really smart or not, or you never get escape velocity. That's always the risk. But I think that's where you have to have some vision.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And someone that I had Jake Paul on the podcast years ago. I think it was back in 2018, but I always see Jake rocking the ketone. He's an investor, right?
Correct. Yeah.
So what's it been like working with him as someone that's, such an influence to the, I don't even want to say influencer, but just boxer, influencer, entrepreneur. What's it been like working with Jake?
He's one of the nicest people, honestly. The interactions I've had with him, super nice, fun storyteller, curious about your stuff, very down to listen and learn. I think his reputation on the internet is really interesting. Obviously, I think he's one of the most popular influential creators out there. So I guess he is getting plenty of credit. I don't think anyone needs to defend him on that. But I think a lot of people also do kind of discount him or oh, he's just idiot jackass guy. It's I think people need to give him more credit. I think I've learned to give people credit. I think it's hard. I think it's really hard to break through the noise on the attention economy. Mm-hmm. And anyone who's done so, I think has something special. I don't know. I'm not the biggest Taylor Swift fan, but I freaking love what she's doing.
Yeah.
I like some of her stuff. She's all good. It's just But I think on like the culture level, she's a genius. Like there's no doubting it. She has a number one song and the number one movie in the country right now. Like the movie of the Eras Tour is the number one movie right now while she has the number one. It's insane. Like she clearly has a touch for it. So I don't have any time for the haters who are like, oh, but like if you don't like her, like you're clearly, you're the one that's out of alignment with like the universe. Like she gets the universe and she knows the game. Jake Paul knows the game. Like the people who know the game and are winning at it, like you don't have to like the exact thing that they're doing. It's like someone could be the most famous sushi chef and you say, okay, I don't like sushi. That's fine. But you still got to respect the game.
Yeah.
And there's still something inside of the way that they like make sushi or talk about sushi or make content around the fact that they make sushi, like that you can, there's so much to learn from. And like, there's no time to be a hater. Yeah. It's like, what are you going to hate on this person? Like I think when you hate on someone, you end up putting up blinders to what instead you could be like drawing inspiration from them.
Absolutely. I mean, it's spot on too. And I'll even just speak from personal experience. Like I interviewed Jake in 2018 when he was still living in LA. And even then he was doing more like crazier things on social back in the vlog days, but he was always in the limited interactions we've had, just the most down to earth, nice guy that, and I've heard this time and time again from other people, just sometimes if you don't know him or you haven't sat down with him, you would maybe think differently, but it's been so cool to see how he's evolved and obviously see him involved with what you guys have going on.
A lot of people are doing like, it's like a performance art too.
Yeah.
I think you realize too, like Oprah Winfrey is not Oprah Winfrey or like no one is who they are. It's like you have the performance version of yourself that it's like a mask that you put on for the world. And you're like, you maybe are more controversial or more this way or that way to like get the people going. But then a lot of times there's like the Wizard of Oz and then there's the guy behind the curtain. A lot of times like the person behind the curtain is more, they just even keeled or down to earth. Like they know that they're constructing.
Yeah.
Like I'm sure if you talk to Taylor Swift, she's not like this on stage version. She's probably just like kind of smart and chill and just like thinking about how she's going to project a better like performance the next chance that she gets. But like, there's a decoupling, right? There's like performance mode, Jake Paul there. And then there's like, hey, I'm like, I'm just a human with 24 hours in the day. And like, what are we having for lunch?
Yeah.
And like, let's talk about ideas person.
For sure. That's awesome. What have been, or I should say, who have been some mentors in your life from a business perspective or even from a marathon perspective that have impacted you the most along your journey?
Yeah. I'm a big reader and like, I try to draw inspiration, not just from like living people or people that I happen to have like known or met. I feel like there's just like massive untapped wisdom from like Steve Jobs, or like who is Steve Jobs's mentor? Steve Jobs was really, he loved Edwin Land, who was the founder of Polaroid, who's like long dead. But like Polaroid was one of the most innovative companies of its time that then inspired Steve Jobs to be the most innovative person. So like reading up on, I mean, Steve Jobs is just canon. I think that's like kind of cliche answer, but like I've just listened to every like podcast, book, everything, all that stuff. I've been really getting into Jeff Bezos's stuff recently. Like he's like all his letters to shareholders, I think are really good. Have you read those?
Yeah, I've read one.
Yeah. Like, so he's like every year he's written a letter to shareholders, and Amazon has been around at this point for like 20 something years. So like it's interesting. He literally like wrote, he built the most impactful, one of the most impactful internet businesses when there was no playbook to do so. And it's just so interesting how he thinks about it and like customer obsession. And like when he's convincing his investors that like Amazon Prime is a good idea, or he's convincing them that the Kindle is a good idea. It's like, and now those are like, or AWS, like these are all like billion-dollar businesses within inside of Amazon. They were like $100 billion businesses within inside of Amazon. And the fact that he had to like convince people of it, the fact that he had to like marshal resources internally on it, get people to focus on it, be like customer obsessed around it. I think Jeff Bezos is super smart. Phil Knight, Nike, I think another one, just like he made jogging a thing. I think the way that he like bent the culture, like there was no like TAM for running shoes. Really, it was like a niche sport. And then he's like, well, what if everyone jogged? What if everyone had better shoes? Then maybe the TAM would be 10 times bigger than it is. If people just had like affordable, comfortable running shoes. So Shoe Dog's really
it's
good
somewhere
one.
Around here. That's one of my favorites.
It's one of the funnest ones. He's not like a preachy person. He's not like, oh, here are my 10 principles. He just like talks.
Yeah. His stories are insane. Like, yeah. I don't know the book where he talked about how he would fly to Japan, like round trip just to think. Like he would book a round trip from Seattle, Japan. I think it's like a 14-hour flight, fly right back. And that was just his think time. And I remember him saying that in the book, and it's always stuck with me just as like a, hey, find your outlet of just time to think, or when you have to address a problem, whether that's running or whatever it may be. That was a story that stuck out to me.
That's huge. Jeff Bezos talks a lot about puttering. It's his word.
I haven't heard that concept from him.
That like, it's really important. His first meeting's at 10 a.m.
Yep, I've heard that.
And he putters around, and I just love just like, cause I putter too. This is like, just kind of like, there's all this like hustle porn around, like you got to wake up, you got to like blah, 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 like have this supplement, have this like workout, do this, do your email. It's like, there's also something to be said for like going on a walk with your toddler in like the sunshine as the sun is coming up, and like stopping to smell the roses, like, and like doing letting your mind go fallow is another way that I've heard it described. Like having some just like true downtime and not be in go, go, go mode, I think is one of the power moves that the most biggest minds make. Like Warren Buffett talks about the importance of making like 2 or 3 decisions a year, a year. And we're like doing all this shit all the time. He's like, you know what? If I make 2, 3 good decisions a year, I'm like one of the wealthiest people on planet Earth. Like obviously he's doing littler stuff along the way, but like it's that like
the macro view.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's so like powerful. Free yourself up like for that mode of thinking. Yeah.
I love that. When it comes to the team behind, I know when we were talking prior to the show, you guys are all remote at HGMN. How has that looked in terms of the last couple of years with COVID, and now you're here in the Los Angeles area? What does the team look like right now? Team, the culture, and really how do you define the team behind the product?
It's been really interesting culture development as we've been remote all through COVID and since. And it's forced us to exercise what I consider to be a really valuable muscle around written communication, where we don't have a ton of meetings. There's not a ton of like water cooler stop and chat time. So we're very memo driven. Like everything starts with there's an owner on the project, on the initiative. And like, here's the plan and here's the decision space and here's the recommendation inside of it. And here's the different stakeholders people read through the document and then they like add their comments in. And then there's like the owner kind of like collates that in. And like, you can just see, you can sit down and you can just in 20 minutes, you can understand like weeks and weeks of work by multiple individuals, just download it into your brain without even there needing to be a meeting necessarily. It's just like, here are all of the, we're swapping to a new 3PL. It's like a third party logistics, like a fulfillment center. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't think I was in a single meeting about it, but the amount of work that was done in that by the person that owned that was massive. That was like a massive undertaking for months. But I could just read. It's like, okay, we talked to all these different groups. Like here are the different rates. Here's what like other companies had to say about different groups. And it's just like all inside of one document and I can just download it. So I think written communication forces a quality of thinking that's above and beyond verbal communication, and being remote forces you to be really good at written communications. I think that's super valuable. It's definitely led to like higher quality of thought, higher quality decision-making in terms of, we were talking about beforehand. It's like, I feel like the ice is thawing around fully remote, where like there are certain positions, like we just hired an events lead and just hired a content lead. And it was like important for those roles to be in Los Angeles. Cause like I'm in LA, like we're going to be doing content. Like you should, like if you have to get on a flight every time we're going to do some like founder content, like that's not the best. Or like, LA has a massive health and wellness and fitness scene that's really good for our product. Like there's, 10 million people in the LA SoCal area. Like let's tap that out before we're like flying all around the world. So like it's helpful if that person's located here. So I would say we're still remote, but then doing just like increasing the cadence of like like, hey, let's get everyone in LA and just like workshop things out for like half a week. And then, and we go back to like dispersed remote, but like getting that energy together on a regular basis. Yeah.
That's great. And I know I've seen you post that, like the team all like at the table and just creating those environments of togetherness, even though it's remote.
Yeah.
That's really cool. Yeah. When my last company, MediaKits, just for context for you, it was the easiest way for creators to aggregate all of their cross-platform social data in one place. So we tap in all the APIs. We were a fully remote team. At our peak prior to acquisition, just 12 people, fully remote. And I learned so much through that process, just of not having obviously a place to be together. We, and I do agree with, and I like the thinking behind like more written context, where I think that over the death of the meeting and people are in so many meetings all the time, you just, it's a double-edged sword, and it can be very just demanding, especially for the engineers or whatever it may be. And I think just that was not only a lesson, but hearing you speak about that, just more intricate thought on the written context. I love that.
One thing that Amazon does is they have at the beginning of meetings that whoever's calling the meeting has to like put together a written brief. And then at the beginning of the meeting, everyone reads the brief in like awkward silence for 5 minutes. And that's just like part of the culture there, is we're all going to like read and download this. So I'm not going to spend the first 20 minutes of the meeting like clicking through slides and like talking. It's like, you can read a lot faster than I can speak. Like, just read this, like download the knowledge into your brain. Like, what's the fastest input into your brain? It's like through your eyes, reading something on the page. Like, how quickly can we get this information into your head, into everyone's head, so that we can then like have a conversation from there? But let's not belabor the like transmission of information and like how, like, let's get that downloaded as quickly as possible. How you crush it with MediaKits as far as like selling it in 18 months.
Yeah. From launch to sale, it was 18 months.
How did that go down? Like, were you looking for that? Like, did someone knock on your door and say,
kind of. So my co-founder and I, Kieran, who did his Ironman recently, the whole idea of MediaKits, for the quick background and for people that may not know, including yourself, is back in 2018, like, we ended up launching the company officially late 2020 or to mid 2021 when the product went live. But we had the idea back in 2018 because one of our friends who was a big automotive creator, his name is JR Garaj, million subscribers, we're all from Virginia. He came to Kieran and I, and he knew we were in the marketing, like, business social space. And he's like, hey guys, can you make a media kit for me? Like, here's my Canva account. Just like, here's my screenshots of my profiles. Make me a media kit and I'm going to send it to this brand. We make it for him and he gets the deal. And 2 weeks later, he comes back to us and was like, hey guys, Ferrari contacting me. They want to fly me down to Daytona Beach, Florida. Can you go update all my numbers and statistics because I had this viral video and they need it today. So can you update it right now? Sure. So we spent an hour or two. We make the media kit for him. We update it, send it to him. He gets the deal. And that's when the idea was born, right? So I, from start to exit, it was 18 months, but this ideation of what we were creating was years and years in the making. And I think that's always important to highlight because that's when we asked ourselves, you know, why isn't there a way for creators to aggregate all their data in one place that updates in real time forever and that they can easily share it with a brand through a link instead of these PDFs, drag and drop, all the stuff. That's when we had the idea, but we were both at home. I was 17 at the time. Kieran was 18. I was still in high school. Then we just sort of shelved the idea. Fast forward 2020, we're both living in Arizona. I moved out there right after high school. And we just saw this more so resurgence of the creator economy in mid 2020. You know, COVID's happening. Everyone's posting so much content. Where we just revisited it. The timing was much better. I've now at that time was doing the podcast for a little over 3 years and had all these relationships. And for me, the whole goal for the podcast has always been brand building, learning from people, but just that business development that you get within it, where we went out to go raise capital for the business. You know, we were initially trying to bootstrap it, but you know how that game goes. Engineers are expensive, designers, building a tech product. So we ended up raising just over $1 million, like 1.4. And I always like to say this is, you know, a huge reason for the podcast for me is the relationships, where about 90% of the 37 investors we brought on were previous guests of the podcast, just friends and people that I've built relationships with that I was able to present the opportunity with and get their thoughts on the product. And they were all not only extremely helpful, but strategic in the sense of industry experience, or they have their networks that they were able to get the product into. Then we that long story short, launched the company. The product went live August 2021. We had this big launch party here in LA. Wiz Khalifa performed. He was a partner, and his manager was an investor. And to the acquisition, we are then 6 to 8 months in after the product goes live. It's early 2022. We have just about 20,000 creators on the platform already from a couple viral channels that we were optimizing for. And I always used to ask myself as a founder, like, how do acquisitions happen, right? Yeah. Like, I interview founders. They've talked about acquisitions, some of them. And like, how's it going to happen for me one day? Who knows? And it was the CEO of the company Viral Nation that acquired us. They're based in Toronto. And it was just, he DM'd me on LinkedIn. Like, hey, Casey, love what you guys are doing in Media Kits. Let's hop on a call. And
he didn't say like we're looking to acquire in the space or anything. He just said, let's.
Yeah, he's like, I want to love to learn more about the product.
But I'm sure you get a lot of, like, I get a lot of LinkedIn DMs.
Absolutely.
But you're like, okay, this guy is legitimate CEO of like a formidable company. Like, let's at least chat.
Yeah, and more so too. And like, they raised a lot. They raised a private equity round right before then, like $200 million. Todd Boehly, Eldridge, all that stuff. So right away, I'm like, oh, like maybe that could be an opportunity one day. But yeah, let's connect. And we were in this phase where we were actually closing a seed round. We had a lead investor. We were raising another $2 million. We had about 1.2 to 1.5 in commitments. And long story short, we just had to make a very, at the time, hard decision. Like, okay, this conversation, acquisition, they expressed interest. Like, we're about to close this round. What's the best decision here for the business? And after just not only thinking a lot about it, talking to investors, advisors, looking at the business, the employees, it just made complete sense to pursue acquisition. But it's risky, right? Because to call off a fundraise when you're burning capital, you could run out of runway. If an acquisition doesn't actually happen, which that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Like, that could have been detrimental, but lo and behold, we got it done after, 6-8 months. And then September 2022, we officially closed, and I worked at the acquiring company for 6 months. And then really since April of this year, I've just been pursuing new ventures and doing the podcast as always. And so it was a roller coaster though. And like, I could go on and on about it, but by any means I had no expectation or really would have wanted to necessarily have been acquired that quickly. But it's just the way it happened. And I'm very grateful for the experience and all the lessons learned.
It's super interesting, 'cause I think that ironically selling a company is one of the last things that founders think about. A lot of founders get into the game 'cause they're really good at, they have a product insight, or they have a really good community or platform, or they have some like spark of ingenuity around what to go and make. And then they get good at fundraising, they get at building their product with engineering or supply chain. If it's a physical product, they get it. And like, it's almost like the afterthought for a lot of founders. I think it's where a lot of times like second time entrepreneurs are really smart. Yeah. Like once you've gone through the full life cycle and you've exited your company, or like you weren't able to exit, then you start thinking from day zero, like, okay, what's the
end in mind?
So it's really interesting for you that like it played out that way. And I think it's an area where a lot of founders are like curious. You own At Acquisition too, right?
Yeah, I do.
That's crazy.
I have so many like domains that I'm sitting on, and it's actually funny because I have At Casey. That's my Instagram handle, which that kind of started all of this because I remember I have. Just for the quick context, I had At Casey Adams 1. That was my handle before. Awesome name.
Yeah.
But I remember just like At Casey, I went to the account. There was this guy who was using it, and I just messaged him and I was like, hey, I would love to own this username. And he's like, 50 grand, 25 grand. And like said all these crazy numbers. I'm like, oh, never going to have this domain. And I really just, and I think it speaks for entrepreneurship as a whole. I just would message him probably every 3 months for 3 years. Just like, hey man, like, hope you're well. Like, let me know if there's any interest in selling the page or selling the domain, whatever it may be. And fat long story short, COVID hits and he ends up saying, hey, by the way, are you still interested? Got the handle. And then that kind of just created this interest of like, oh, like cool handles are out there. And more so, more recently, I should say, is like I have At Questions, and that's sort of spun off into a new podcast that I'm launching with a DJ friend of mine who's won a Grammy, and Brandon Jenner, who's an awesome musician. And just the domains sort of create these verticals of passion where I have At Jogger on Instagram. And now we've been doing the Saturday run clubs at the track with a cool community. And
oh, hell yeah.
I kind of look at them as like focal points of conversation.
Yeah.
So there's a couple that I have no idea what to do with, but they're fun.
It's super interesting. I feel like that's a certain like personality type of like a lot of founders I know also have like 100, 200 domains on like Namecheap or whatever, like GoDaddy, yeah, whatever. I had this random idea that could be interesting sometime. Well, what's interesting about domains too is like they're like real estate where they keep their value.
You guys have a great domain.
Yeah, we have HVMN. We just bought ketone.com.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. And
wow.
Yeah. And
that's incredible.
If someone out there owns at ketone, if you own at ketone on Instagram, message me. Let's talk. Yeah. we might be in touch for 3 years here.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But because it's interesting, right? Because like I believe in ketones in general. So like that to me is just a piece of real estate. It wasn't like we paid X dollars, but I don't see it as an X dollar expense. I see it like if you bought a house for X dollars, you'd expect in 10 years, unless you made a bad decision, that like the house is going to be worth X plus appreciation. Like if you bought electrolyte.com or protein.com, like those are super valuable. So like I'm bullish on the category because like we make ketone IQ and like that is a very valuable for that. But even like larger than that, it's like I'm just bullish on the space to where like whatever happens, like that's a materially valuable asset that the company has for us or to a potential acquirer. So that's one way I think that I rationalize my irrational obsession with you on you. I think you're actually better at it on just like interesting handles and domains. But I think about it as like, it's not like, say you spent $10K for a domain. It's not like spending $10K on Facebook ads where it's like, okay, you lit that on fire and it worked or it didn't. It's like, if you spend $10K on whatever, like jogger.com or at jogger, it's like, well, jogging is here to stay. Like whatever you paid market price is probably you could probably sell that if you needed to in 5 years. And like, if that trend has gone up, it could even appreciate. Like I see it as like more of a real asset than a like expense. If that makes sense.
I'm glad you think that. Cause I think the same way.
Like, that's what I tell my wife at least.
Yeah, for sure. I'm just curious, how long were you guys trying to get ketone.com for?
I think it was pretty quick. I think one of the things that worked for us too is like, I think that's an area where going through a broker is really helpful because like if I show up and it's like, hi, I'm the CEO of a company that sells ketones, like you'll get fleeced.
Yeah.
Right.
For sure.
Cause it was like, oh, well to you, I think this is worth $1 million versus like, if it comes, it's just like random Jimmy, the broker comes in and is like, hey, I don't know. You selling this? Like,
yeah.
So I think that level of indirection or, abstraction of having like a broker, I think some areas in life, like a middleman is not helpful, but I would say if you're trying to acquire a domain, it's like, it could be helpful. If you're trying to buy your name .com or something, it's like, because your company, you just sold your company, the first thing the seller is going to do is Google you and they're going to see that you just sold your company for $30 million or whatever, and they're going to be like, oh, okay, this person's breaded, they're like, let me charge them a boatload, versus like random broker person just like, hey, is this available? So I don't know, just free advice. Like I think it's an area where having a trusted broker that like you or your friends have worked with before can be helpful.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad you think that. And obviously HVMN.com, another one, awesome domain.
That was crazy. The 4-letter domain and then getting 4 letters on the different platforms.
Yeah. You guys are really on top of it.
Cause it was hard. Like it doesn't even allow you. If you go like, you can do like whatever, ASDFJ, like if they just, it needs to be at least 5 characters.
Oh really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And then I think
you guys have it on Twitter.
Yeah, we have it on Twitter. So
X now, right?
X, yeah, yeah. Well, because my argument was like Nike, bro. Like, and I don't know. I guess it just worked.
That's incredible.
Like I knew, I don't know, someone in there through this network, but that four letters is good. HVMN good. I think good to own. It's good to own, you know, noun like ketone or jogger. It's good to own like a noun that's just like dictionary word. That's super valuable. It's also valuable to own like completely made up word, Zillow or whatever, like like make up a word and then you can just load it with all the meaning. Like totally. That's kind of what we did with HVMN. It stands for Healthy Modern Nutrition. Like it's really valuable now because like HVMN is just we've made like millions of put millions of dollars into impressions and years of work and it all out there. And we own HVMN.com. That's a whole other just can of worms around like, like inventing words versus using dictionary words.
Absolutely. We could go on a rabbit hole on that one. Well, last question before we wrap up, Michael, I first want to say this conversation has been incredible. I've learned so much from you. Just regarding the company, what excites you the most looking into the future and what are you just most excited about as you think about this year and the years to come?
The most exciting thing to me is honestly the team, people that I get to work with every day. I'm super thankful for, I basically get to hand pick the coolest people in the world. Not just me anymore. Like there's people, I'm not the exact hiring manager on everyone, but it's like people I hired are hiring people. And like, everyone is just like cool. If they're not cool, we don't hire them. Like, it's just like a very simple setup where everyone's really smart. Everyone's hardworking. Everyone's very bought into like doing dope shit with their life. It's like, everyone wants to do something cool. It's like, it's cool if you make the next Nike. It's cool if your team was the ones that built the Golden Gate Bridge. Like, it's cool to like leave a dent in the world. And like, everyone is like really bought in on that. Everyone's really smart. Everyone's really dynamic. Everyone wants to win. Everyone has equity in the company. So everyone has like upside of it all doing well together. So I think what's exciting to me is like just continuing to grow that tribe of people. And like, I think about it a lot. Like, okay, yeah, if say that we like sold the company one day, you know, what I think I would instantly miss like what we're at right now, which is like getting able to show up with cool people and build something interesting every single day. Like, I think if I sold the company, I would take like a couple months off and then I would get itchy. Like, and I'd just be like, I would just start calling like the five coolest people I know, 10 smartest people I know. Like, hey, what, like you want to do something? Like, I think the, like putting money aside, I think what's actually fun is building interesting products, technology, shaping the culture, doing it with other cool people, making money along the way to like fuel the whole thing. And, you know, people should generate wealth off of their hard work, but that, just like making beautiful stuff in the world, like getting inspired by previous generations, previous creators, and then like paying, like being a conduit for that into like the future, the next generation, I think is that's the good stuff.
Absolutely. Well, Michael, thank you again for coming on the show today. I'm very inspired by you. Looking forward to when I crack my 3-hour marathon goal one day, I'll be sure to give you a call and say, look, remember that time when I thought it was impossible?
You're 100% going to do it. If you literally just keep cracking at it, like you'll do it.
For sure.
Well, this is a lot of fun, Casey. Thanks absolutely. For having me on.
And last but not least, where's the best place everyone can follow you, learn more about the brand, and just stay connected with you overall?
Yeah, check me out on Instagram, Twitter, everywhere. I'm mainly on Instagram these days at Michael D. Brandt. And then the brand is at HVMN. It stands for Health Via Modern Nutrition. So check us out. Love hearing from people. Tag me, say what's up. Love hearing what people are building, what you're training for, interesting biohacking stuff that you're doing. Yeah, very, very active out there.
Well, thanks again for coming on and everyone tuning in. Thank you so much for listening or watching this long. And I will talk to you guys soon.